Hello, everyone. Welcome to the BBG Show, episode 6. I'm going to try and move through this introduction quickly for once. And we're not tired, by the way. No one's tired at all. Because last episode was a bit of a snooze fest, and I want to rectify that. So
I disagree.
Sorry. Right, so joining me, as you just heard, is my great host.
Were you going to call me a hairstylist?
My greatest guest.
And hairstylist, apparently.
And hostess, yeah.
Hostess?
Yeah. So
I swear you only say that when you're in a uniform and on a plane.
Or when it's something dodgy. Anyway, Maya. Yeah. Hello, Maya.
Hi. Hostess for the day.
What are you? Yeah.
What I don't know. I question myself every day asking that.
Great. Okay, well, today we are going to talk about several games that we've been playing. We've been playing a lot of games.
Your nervous energy is getting to me. Calm down. Stop twitching the pen.
Maya, breathe. We've got to keep this high tension, high speed. This has all got to come out. And
I'm not at my most creative when there's all this tension, okay?
This has nothing to do with creativity. I'm not looking for creativity.
This is the reason why I don't like racing games. Anyway.
Look, I'm just looking to get this introduction out of the way. Fine, done and dusted. Get out of my face.
Am I not helping?
No. So as I said, we're going to talk about lots of games. Little King's Story, Black and White, Harvest Moon, Magical Melody.
Why is there a massive gap between Harvest Moon and Magical Melody?
I'm thinking.
Okay, sorry. Why don't we start again?
Well, what are they? Do you know? Do you remember what they are? You know what? It doesn't. You know, this thing. It doesn't even matter because I can edit it. Why is there such a gap between the game tiles? Earthbound.
And that was.
And also, we were going to speak a bit about the Wii as well. So that's it. All right, let's get on with it. Shall we talk a bit about the Wii first, quickly, very briefly?
Okay.
We got a Wii.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we did.
Not long after the Dreamcast, and
in my opinion, not a long enough gap, but it was actually me who pushed for it.
Yeah, exactly.
There wasn't. Well, it's just because I got the Dreamcast with a kind of as a gift, and then I felt quite like, you know, the Dreamcast is quite an odd console because it doesn't have many games that I would necessarily want to play for
RPGs.
My taste. Yeah, there's no... Or Sims, or any type of...
The specialty was arcade games.
Yeah, which is not really to my taste totally. I mean, I don't mind it sometimes, but it's not something that I can really immerse myself in. So it was more really me pushing for it because I wanted to play Harvest Moon Magical Melody more than anything. And
yeah, there's some other stuff like Rune Factory.
Oh god, there's so,
like
there's
little,
so much
and obviously
stuff.
Little King's Story as well.
Well, no,
there's even us. We're even like immortalized on, I don't know, last episode I've said before, with us talking about this. You looking for the Sim and you being like, oh, someday we'll get a Wii, we'll play Little King's Story.
Really?
Someday in the far flung future, it'll be a long time from now.
That's me, little deprived me. And it really, to be honest, the biggest impetus was to play Little King's Story because, you know, I played it at your family's house and a little bit, and I watched a little bit of it and I just kind of fell in love with it. Yeah, I guess we're going to talk about that now.
Yeah. And before we move on to it, could we just talk a bit about getting the Wii? Because a Wii is quite a, not exactly, I don't want to say an unusual console because now, I mean, it's standard.
How is it unusual?
But in terms of the fact that it has this the Miis and it has an interface, a very present interface that's outside of the game or the games themselves. I mean, I know the Dreamcast and the Saturn and the PlayStation, they all have, you know, when you start it up without a game and you get to the browser or you get to the little menu where it's like, you know, check your memory card and that kind of stuff. Change the internal clock.
Only you would get excited about that.
Obviously, but on the Wii, you know, it's a whole different kind of kettle of fish, and the fact that it has the Miis and creating Miis and using them in the games themselves, things like that. It was really weird because, you know, we got a secondhand one and
The spirit of the Wii was still within it.
Yeah,
the spirit of the old owners.
They didn't format it, so we have all the game saves and
the little
their
kids,
Miis.
Their Miis were just in there waiting to be rediscovered. And yeah, it's quite sad that we kind of just, they were just there and we were just staring back at them and it was like, you're going to get deleted.
Yeah. And obviously it was a well-used Wii because of, that was, it was
the
obvious.
The amount of memory.
Yeah, just a lot of Miis and a lot of game saves, stuff like that. Anyway, this is all starting to sound a bit creepy, but, you know, I just
it
thought...
It is very creepy to just have somebody else's Miis living in your Wii. And just, like, it is something very ghostly about it.
Mm.
But, I don't know, I didn't mind it too much because I try not to think about it too,
no,
too
of course.
Much.
But just the, you know, when we did, we got rid of, like, the Miis and we made our own. And just that sense of...
Reclamation.
Like inaugurating a console and it personalises it, you know, it makes it yours in a way that other consoles are just kind of generic...
I don't know. I think that inherently in a lot of different kind of games that kind of exists.
Oh yeah, in games, and you could talk about you sort of personalize a memory card, kind of, you know, because it's got your games on it and stuff. But but you know, I mean, usually the Wii, the base console is just
sort of a computer.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess I think it's definitely why the Wii became so successful in a way because I think there's. You know, it was both the kind of the combination of having the controls being very, very accessible and kind of user friendly, and even children or people that have never played video games before could kind of appreciate
it. Intuit it, yeah.
Yeah, and then at the same time, the kind of the Miis I think were very, very, yeah, it was just very. I mean, the very fact that a console could be called a Wii and still become massively successful, I think, is still quite mind boggling to me.
Do you remember the first time you heard the name?
Yes, I do, and I laughed a lot, and I ran around, like saying wee 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 wee, because I'm still a massive
and
child. I still find it funny.
I was gonna say, and you weren't 7 years old.
No, when did the Wii come out? Like 8 years ago or something. Yeah, I was in my late teens. There was no excuse for me to react like that.
Yeah, I think my reaction. I remember hearing about it. And my reaction was kind of shock and horror, because obviously at the time I was still very much in my kind of fanboy phase. And, you know, it had been nicknamed The Revolution. That was its kind of the project name.
Oh, God, that's so funny.
And you can see why, you know, and at the time I thought it would be in a good name. Now I'm not so sure, but...
No, because that sounds like you're dooming it to fail.
They're just... this is a code name. The GameCube was codenamed Dolphin, for instance, Project Dolphin.
I know, but The Revolution, so stop their own asses.
Yeah, well, but when I heard Wii, it was like kind of dismay, because it seemed like that was it. Like, that was kind of like, you know, the nail in the coffin before
it had even
started. Yeah.
Well, do you know what it reminds me of a bit? Do you remember the time when Jif became Sith?
No, I don't remember that.
Yeah,
time.
But you,
yeah, okay. I remember finding it a bit odd.
No, but like, I remember like the horror that I had, because obviously the reason why Jif is called Sith, I think it's the same reason why they called it the Wii, is because they could call it the Wii all over the world, and it sort of transcended linguistic barriers in a way. But and that's the reason why they changed Jif to Sith. But I remember feeling such a lot of anxiety and sadness about that, because I had always known it as Jif, and the fact that they changed it.
So while I was a Nintendo fanboy, you were a Jif fanboy.
It just really made me sad, okay?
Yeah.
This is something that no one else in the world can appreciate, because it was called Sith everywhere else already, and it was just...
Oh, no.
Anyway, stop again. This is getting to a sadder part of my childhood. I don't want to go there.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Just the renaming of things.
Okay, well...
Little King Story?
Yeah, that's it. That's it for the Wii.
It's the first game that we started playing on the Wii, isn't it?
No, we played Harvest Moon first.
Yes, but not together. Like, because I mean, I played Harvest Moon addictively. I've stopped now because Little King Story basically took over, and I'll have to get back to it. Harvest Moon, but with Little King Story, I mean, why don't we give our overall impressions and talk a bit about the game itself and what it entails?
All right. So what is it? Little King Story is about a little cute, charming boy.
who kind of doesn't have any friends, and then he sort of seems to create a little world using the kind of stuff in his room. This is just the preamble to the actual
playing
game.
With puppets.
Yeah.
And a little cardboard
and
box.
And a cardboard box. And he makes himself the king, and he has a kingdom.
Then his game is disturbed by some mice. He chases the mice into the forest, and then he finds a crown, and he becomes
the
little king that he was kind of
messing around with
before, yeah. And so, and he's got this kind of Don Quixote-like helper, sidekick.
Hauser,
that's right. And then Hauser's got his sidekick Pancho, which is just like Don Quixote.
Except it's a cow. Yeah. They're a different species.
But they can only speak, like, the cow can only speak to him.
Why are you making this? This is not a big part of the...
No, it's not a big part of the game.
And you also have two other people that...
But it is part of
Verdi
the charm.
Verdi and... What's the other guy's name?
Liam, your ministers.
Yeah, your ministers. And you basically start the game with basic soldiers and a kind of your kingdom, which is relatively small on the map. And the whole purpose of the game is to defeat the seven kings or the seven kingdoms.
Unify the world.
World domination. And then slowly expand your kingdom. And as you expand your kingdom, you can build new buildings, and you can make new classes. So you can have archers, you can have chefs, you can have
farmers, merchants,
yeah,
stuff
all
like
kinds
that.
Of all kinds of things.
Yeah, and they all have some kind of use or purpose in the outside world, the kind of hostile environment. And then in that sense, then the actual gameplay itself really is probably closest to Pikmin, in terms of you're managing this kind of little army of... It doesn't ever go... You can't get more than 30, have more than 30 people in your team, so it's a bit smaller than Pikmin, where you can have like 100. But yeah, you mix and match your team, you go out into the wild, and you have miners who can deal with rocks, lumberjacks who can cut down trees, and there's all this kind of thing going on, and it's about you trying to... I mean, it's weird, because it reminds me, the structure outside of the town, it reminds me of Zelda a lot with this, because there's a very set formula about what you do, and there are bosses at the end of each section, and in each kingdom, and there's things like that.
Yeah, but although the gameplay in some ways is very different, just because of the fighting is the king himself is a terrible fighter. He does not fight.
No,
you throw your battle people at the enemies or the bosses, and you literally throw them like in Pikmin. And I think my feeling about it is that it's just such a charming game. It's so cute, and it's very beautiful. It's a lot of love and care has gone into it, and the environments themselves are so imaginative. But that's the thing, they're imaginative without being too weird. I mean, you and I last night were having a conversation again about Persona 4, which seems to be haunting us, about like how sometimes a game can be weird in a bad way, almost like it's just weird in a kind of for no reason. Whereas I feel like with this game, because you've got this kind of narrative of this child who is messing around in his room and is like letting his imagination wander, in the game you find these random things. Like, for instance, you can get you find these massive eggs, boiled eggs that have been cut in half, that you and you need a special class that you can get one person of them, called an Eggin, to get rid of this egg. Stuff like that, just really random, cute things that just kind of give the environment so much. Just makes you so excited to explore. I mean, you and I finished the game, I think, in 2 weeks, and it's like
we put in 30 hours,
which is insane. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things I think is really cool and makes it hard to kind of describe or really talk about, is that there's so many different tasks that you do. It's got this sort of cycle to it of things that you do, but you can do them sort of out of order, and you can take on quests at any time, sort of little optional quests to get a bit of money and things like that. But you have a sort of cycle of, well, you go exploring the outside world, and you find bosses and you kind of progress the story. There's not much of a story, but you sort of progress things by being the...
And marrying their princesses.
By being the bosses, the kings, and marrying their princesses. So you end up with 7 or 8 wives by the end of it. But then there's also, once you've done that and you're back in your place, there is a need usually to expand your kingdom, which you do by beating these kind of little mini bosses who live on the edge of your town and the edge of your kingdom. And then you can expand, and then you can create new classes and things like that. So there's a balance or balancing act between those two things.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's weighted more heavily on, okay, you need to beat the guardians on the edge of your town, expand your town and do all this stuff. But then you might, you know, you have space to build a town, but you don't have any money. So then you need to go and do the main quest. And there's usually a lot of money in the main quest, more money than there is in little side quests and things like that.
I think some of the thing that I liked the most about it, I mean, the thing is, I felt like the mini quests, and you get quests from people in your town, and you get quests from your wives as well. So we're talking about his wives, it's such a serious matter, his wives. Mm. But it's obviously, it's very humorous, because obviously he's polygamous. But
it's just so cute, and the wives are so weird and
ditzy
kooky
and strange.
But they all have different, totally different personalities. Just like the kings. The kings are also crazy and funny as well.
Mm. The thing that I liked the most about it is that the quests and the main quests did not the little quests did not feel as inconsequential as it can do in other games.
Yeah.
And you wanted to do those quests, and sometimes because the rewards were good enough, but also just because it's
a chance to see more of the game.
Yes,
and the game, the world, and everything is just so charming and so nice and fun, and
lots of secrets
everywhere.
It basically reminded me of what it was like to be a child and to look at the world, you know, afresh.
Mm-hmm.
And it's that feeling, it's like when you're a child, like, you know, when you first, like, you know, we live in London, I grew up in London, when you first go on the tube or you go on a train, and like now going on a train is a hassle, but when you're a child it's so exciting for no reason. It's just, well, no, there is a reason, you know, the tubes are amazing and you just feel so excited about it because you're going on the train, noises and it's that's what it reminded me of, that feeling of being so excited about the ordinary.
Yeah.
because you know, the whole place, you know, you're constantly being reminded that, and I get the sense from the maker, that's kind of what he intended, and also because I think it's distributed
to create that child,
childlike
thing about
but again, this is not a game for children. I think it's actually a really hard game in some parts.
It
really isn't, but it's for adults, because some of the sense of humour as well I think would be slightly beyond a child, but it's
not rude or anything like that, but it would just go over the top of the head. I think that in Europe anyway, it's 12 plus is the age rating, which I think is odd, and because I don't really see what in the game would warrant that age rating.
The polygamy,
yeah, obviously. I think the game is just too hard for someone
it's
under
complex.
12.
It's a complex.
It's very complex, yeah.
But it kind of suffers from the same thing that Psychonauts suffers from, which is that it looks like it should be for children.
Yeah.
Even though I really don't think it, I mean, video games in general, right? They suffer from that. But it reminds me, is it WADA, who, you know, they have some connection with
Harvest
Moon.
Moon
series.
Yeah, their producer.
And
he's the producer of the Harvest Moon series,
like
that. He oversees the whole thing.
Yeah, and this is the reason why there are cows everywhere. And it looks a little bit like Harvest Moon. Like, you can definitely see aesthetically, there's a bit of Harvest Moon in there.
There's a couple of references.
And there are references
over
to
it. And subtle.
Yeah, like the one section of your kingdom is called Moon Harvest Valley or something.
Yeah.
And but it's very sweet and irreverent, and it's so charming, and there's so much to another aspect that I really enjoy is that there are parts which are right next to your kingdom which you will not be able to access until right at the end of the game.
Mm.
So it gives you this feeling of actual exploration, I think, is actually very, very difficult to pull off, and you're forced to re-explore areas. But again, I say forced, but you want to, because you'll see, you know, in a sense, it's not really, it's in some ways.
I don't even think, I'm not even sure that you are forced.
Well,
you are,
you
it's
kind
as
of.
Optional, isn't it? All of it, I think.
No, I think you kind of, there must be some parts of it that you kind of have to go back to places.
Mm.
But regardless, I mean, the point is, all I'm trying to say is that for a video game, like, in a sense, I feel like it uses the form very, very cleverly, because in some video games, you have to go back through things. Like, I mean, like recently, we've been playing Resident Evil, And the problem with that is that you go, you keep having to go through things, and it's not that it's boring. It's just that it's not. It's a bit of a chore after a while. Whereas with this, it's not about that. It's much more about the kind of joy of exploration, I think. Mm-hmm. Do you have a kind of favourite moment in the game?
Yeah, I do actually. Yeah, I wanted to mention just. But in terms of like the things towards the end of the game, where you would kind of think, and a lot of games, you know, feel like they're spent by the time you're halfway in or two thirds in, you've seen everything. Little King's Story, I feel like keeps giving you new stuff even right up until the end. So like there was something that really surprised me, and it's one of those things where you could very easily not find this or not come across this. There's a bit where you can buy a theatre or a cinema, I think it is, for your...
Quite late in the game.
It's one of the late areas. It just says that it will keep your people happy. And there is like a sort of happiness meter. It doesn't really mean anything as far as I know or as far as you can tell. But, you know, by that point in the game, you're probably raking in enough money that at some point you will just want to buy it.
For completion's sake,
yeah. Mm. To complete that portion of the town, because it looks good and all this stuff. So, you know, I buy it. And also, most of the buildings in the game you can't interact with or go in. You can send citizens in usually to collect taxes. And also, if it's certain buildings will change certain characters' classes, right? However, you go to the theatre, and if you try and go in... It will tell you, you know, this cinema is now showing Love in the Time of Camels or something like that, you know, a romance between two camels. And there's this really hilarious poster of these two camels in love, kissing or something like that. Okay. And so you go in and watch it. The king comes out and says, the film was terrible. And you say, okay, wow. That's such a cool detail. Then when you go and you sit on your throne at some point, and your throne is where you get all the stuff done, and then someone comes to see you and it's the manager of the theatre, and the manager of the theatre says, I'm so sorry that we had this rubbish production of the camels. I'm sorry you went to see it because it's so disappointing. I know it's bad. So I'm going to put on a special film just for you called Swimming Pool, something like that, at night, and you can only play at night. So you say, okay, great. And then if you go back at night and you can go see it, and it's this little music video that plays, you know, on the like theatre screen in front of you, and it shows you it, and it's probably just, you know, like the director's friend's music video, but it's made using the same kind of aesthetic style as the Little King Story cutscenes. Anyway, I know that's a bit of a long moment.
No, I understand.
That was just something that I thought was such a cool bonus and such a detail that 25 hours into the game, you would think that the game would have nothing new to show you. But there it is, and it's just really well hidden, and as I said, so easy to miss, so easy. And it doesn't give you anything, it just gives you you can just watch this video.
I have two favourite moments. One of my favourite moments is a boss, which I found incredibly hard.
You know, we haven't even mentioned the bosses. And
the bosses are
probably the biggest draw, or one of the biggest draws of the game.
So inventive, so inventive and hilarious and just strange. But my favourite boss was I think it's called TV Land. It's a land of kind of broadcasters, which is again very strange. And I'm not going to reveal too much, because I think that people really should... I actually kind of want to endorse it. Say, go out and buy it and experience it. It also didn't do very well, which I'm quite surprised about. But again, I mean,
critically it did. I understand commercially.
It didn't do great.
No, I don't
think so. But yeah, and I think that the boss which basically it features a kind of, it's half geography test and half a kind of, you know, watching this kind of weird 1984 conspiracy thematic to it as well. And I just thought it's such a cool boss, partly because again it's to do with the, you know, what we think of when we look at the news, and it marries both this kind of, oh, it's educational, but at the same time it's got all this news, and news is scary and conspiratorial, and the broadcasters are the evil ones, and I really, really enjoyed that. And then my other favourite moment is, I'm not going to spoil it, but I found the ending For me, I know this is not so much for you because you're kind of used to being disappointed by games. I have very, very high standards when it comes to endings because to me, if an ending
and
is
a
not,
crazy obsession with them and as a crazy, well,
okay,
I have to add,
I had no idea that I was so unusual. But for me, if an ending it messes stuff up, if it does something wrong. That is it
for you.
Me.
That spoils the whole thing.
I feel like if it had been a bad ending, I would have felt like I'd wasted. Even if I really enjoyed the game, I'd feel like I wasted hours of my life because it did not give me the payoff that I deserve. I don't
bizarre.
Know. It might be. Hang on. It might be because I read a lot of novels and that and you're reading. If you didn't get that payoff, you kind of think, you know, that wasn't really good. But with a game, it's like, for me, it's even more annoying because you spend such a long time doing it. You know, you give so much of yourself to it. I don't care if I sound crazy. But anyway, the ending of Little King's Story, I found, was so simple and so beautiful and so affecting that I really found it just very, very, very... touching and good and well done, incredibly well done and subtle in a way that I've never actually experienced with the game before.
I'd like to mention a bit more about the bosses, in particular the one who I always think of as an early boss called Shishkababu. I think he speaks like that, right?
No,
the French guy.
He's a French one.
Yeah, Shishkababu.
You sound like you're saying Dvoruku, which is the drunk guy.
Okay. But yeah, the idea, he's just a really fat, you know, French guy who's really into his food, his desserts, right? And so he comes and he rolls at you, and it's pinball, basically. It's a pinball game. But instead of flippers, you use your troops and send them forward, and you're on, you know, the baseline, you know, at the bottom of the pinball table, effectively. And the boss fight is you sending your troops in to knock the king, who's the ball,
flippers, basically.
Up. Yeah, to send him up, and you've got to. I mean, it's quite challenging. Not so much because of the pinball challenge, but there is a sort of time limit.
Yeah,
because your troops lose health time they hit him and things like that.
There's a lack of control as well. I mean, with pinball, the flippers, you have a degree of control. With your troops, slightly less control.
You have to sort of get used to it, and you're penalised if the king comes, you know, to the baseline and hits you, basically. But it's just such a really cool concept, and all of those kind of mini game. I mean, the geography test that you mentioned before as well is similar in that it's not testing you in the way that bosses usually test you. Some of the bosses are very conventional tests, although they're very epic conventional tests, which is more like what you would expect in a game, but they're really good. Those ones as well are really good and really well done.
But
some of them, anyway.
Again, to say though that the bosses in particular are very difficult. I think
yes, some of them are
incredibly difficult, and then I think that, you know, to me, I think that's a reason why for children it would be hard. Like, I just don't think that I think it's kind of a shame in a way because it's such a beautiful game. And for a child, I'd be really happy if I ever have a child, like, for them to play it because it's so beautiful.
I think we played it on normal difficulty. I think there is easy, so I don't know how much that would how much that would make things easier, but we played it cooperatively, basically, and that I think is a really good effective way of playing it. Because the game is demanding in very different ways, you know, in terms of the exploration, the kind of strategy, or a lot of sort of RTS style. But there's also quite a lot of demands on your reflexes as well, because the way you attack enemies is you send, you know, you throw your enemies onto whatever the enemy is. But you often have to withdraw your enemies at the right moment, because there are some enemies, especially later in the game, who can kill your troops in one hit. And there are always different strategies and different ways of doing it. You can make it easy for yourself, but you kind of do need to be, I'd say, pretty good at games in general.
Yeah, unlike me. I mean, I think that you need to. I think playing cooperatively is a good thing. I think it.
Or it could just get frustrating for one person.
Yeah, I think it's just because there are certain challenges where it just takes a fresh set of hands to just kind of, you know, take it and just to give it a go. I mean, there were some bosses that were really hard, like the dragon boss. I mean, is notable. I think you just want to have another person give it a go and just give you a break. And I think
even if it's just for them to try a different strategy or for them to give you
and
some
also just to remind tips. You of something that you haven't done. Because there are certain parts in the game where you cannot progress unless you do a certain thing. And it's quite easy.
Right.
There's a lot of different things that you can do. So it's quite easy to lose track of it a little bit.
Almost like an adventure game or a Metroid game where there's, you know, there's different certain areas that you need to go back to.
Yeah,
to backtrack
paths.
To where the path will branch off, but you can't access it yet. It's good to have someone who to be watching and to, you know, keep note of those details and all that stuff. So, yeah. I would say it's an excellent, excellent game.
It is definitely one of my favourite games. I think it's incredibly well balanced, immersive environment. I mean, there's very little you can say that's wrong with it, really.
Mm.
I mean, the only odd
bad map. That's one.
It has a very
bad
map.
One slight negative.
It slowly starts getting an obsession with maps, especially when I've seen how good some of them can be. Like I'm watching you play Metroid Prime now, and it's. The map is so good. It's not that hard to make a good map.
And Resident Evil as well. I mean, the thing is, I want to say, I kind of have to forgive it a bit because the world is just so big. But still, I don't know. I don't think it's not a massive problem, but it is somewhat of an issue. And the other thing as well is that it's sometimes hard. If you take a big break from the game, it's quite hard sometimes to come back to it and remember. You have to really have it in your head. I mean, that's what happened to me because I played it when it came out and I played through most of the game. I got close to the end, but at some point I just took a break and I don't know why. And when I came back to it, I just wasn't really sure what I was doing.
Final
sort of thing.
Final point. You know what we've forgotten to mention? The music. The music is all classical, a classical score.
Mostly. Sure, remixes
and it is,
rearrangements.
It is so perfect, so good, so beautifully done, and it's so beautifully recorded, very, 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 top notch. I felt like I was being educated. I think, who was it that said, was it the creator?
The director?
Yeah, the director was said that he doesn't really know much about classical music, and I don't really either. I find it quite, elitist. So I don't really care for it that much. But so it's quite, I mean, he basically said he just loved listening to it, even though he didn't know what they were called. It was a wonderful soundtrack to your kind of adventure and your activities, I found. It's very relaxing.
Yeah.
That's my final point.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
Do you want to start talking about the games you've been playing? Or should I go first?
You know, I've been struggling with this the last 2 weeks. I don't know.
I'll start. I'm playing a lot of games the last 2 weeks. Probably too many games. And the one that I'm going to talk about is something that a strong enough word to say how much I hate this game. Without going into just horrendous swear words. But anyway.
It's fine.
Is it black and white or white and black? Which one is it? I still don't know what it's called.
So that's what you've been putting.
White
you've been
and black.
Building the suspense because
white.
You don't know what the name of the game is. Yeah, it's
I'm
called
trying.
Black and white.
Whatever. I mean,
the phrase, you know, black and white.
Whatever. Anyway, it's a PC game. And it was actually quite famous in its day, right?
Yeah.
Maybe
it was X Bullfrog. Well, there's not even any point in calling them ex-Bullfrog because now they're, you know, really famous in their own right. It's Peter Molyneux, you know, in his Fable.
And he's sort of...
His Fable group.
And he's sort of, is he the guy that's famous for just overblowing everything and saying it's the most amazing gaming experience ever and it's just going to be revolutionised gaming and blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, we watched that interview with him, didn't we?
Oh yeah, we accidentally watched an interview.
What was that? Was that on a documentary?
It was on a documentary. It was so random that he was there.
Oh, that one about
which
money.
We need to write about. Yeah, it's called The Men Who Made Us, but it's a 3-part documentary on BBC.
And the final episode, there's a segment of Peter Molyneux analysing the Wii.
The documentary was about the way that industries make us into sort of children, so that also children longer and sort of make us consume stuff. But anyway, that's interesting in its own right. And he was there as usual with his spiel. Okay, again.
But he was sort of bigging up himself and his own games as being like the first games ever that were targeted at adults.
I just wonder whether whenever anyone gives him a microphone or a camera or anything, it's just suddenly it's just like, whoa, I'm getting attention.
There's just
ding.
Hello.
Switch on. Anyway, back to Black and White. Basically, this game is about basically you build up your town, and you can see why I would be interested in it because obviously I've actually given my civilization 4 to Adrian to hide from me, which he's been doing a good job of. I haven't weakened. I weakened once. Like I asked you for it once in the last 4 weeks. It's I feel like I've. It's like, and I basically, it's a bit like a cocaine addict needing some meth. So I went to Black and White.
This is all part of that, you know, searching for the right sim or the right strategy.
Yeah, it's something that I'm searching for this, for the right, exactly the right sim. In it, you have a creature, which is quite a big part of the game, which helps you. So you can either choose a monkey, a tiger, or a cow. And to help build, so you help your little people build villages with wood, and you're kind of god in this, and you have a hand as who represents you and
you
your
powers.
You
can teach your creature as well, can't
yes,
you?
Yes, and you can teach your
to
your,
help
exactly
or to do whatever you want.
You can
to
teach him
stuff,
to do
or
the things that you can do. So, for instance, you can give when the people are hungry, you can give them food. You learn how to give food. You learn how to give them wood. And basically, the game proceeds by you. Slowly, you build up one area and then it gets decimated for whatever reason, and then you go to the next area. And I think there are 4 or 5 islands in all, although I wouldn't know because I haven't finished the game.
Well, it's got a strange balance, hasn't it, between kind of open-ended gameplay of the kind of
building
civilization
up,
kind and the story. And the narrative-driven side, because there is a plot, and as you said, that plot. The game that we were obviously comparing to was ActRaiser, because that's a similar kind of game. But your town doesn't get decimated.
No.
You know, there's some small changes, but really
the towns are interrelated, and they're not destroyed ever. You just make it's a series of making it better. Okay, and this is the key issue. The fact is, you know, for me, the thing that I desire and love most about like these games that I found from playing Civilization is that I love the process of building perfect places and perfect world, and I love that feeling of being able to help all these little people get on with their little lives and all this stuff. And I love the amount of detail that's in this game. Like, it's really good that you can make them breed, like the people who breed. You need to make sure that the people that breed are people that are actually really good workers, like who are craftsmen or whatever, so that their offspring are hard workers as well. So there is a lot of love and attention to detail. However,
and the fact that you choose the breeders,
I need to talk about how much I hate it because I think I'm going to explode.
Okay, we're talking too much about how much you like it, all the good stuff. And
time to get angry.
Push aside
because,
those facts.
Yeah. I mean,
good stuff.
Because I'm trying to be balanced, but I'm just finding it too hard. It's like, oh my god. Anyway. The reason I really hate it is because that's the side I like of it, but the fact is the game destroys you. It destroys your town, and then you have to move on to the next area and build it up from scratch. Okay, fine, I understand. Evil, that's very evil. But then it gets worse because basically I ended up on the third island, and you just it forces you to like have people die and stuff like that. And no matter how many times I restarted the game, I even got Adrian to come in and try and help me with this one section where you just couldn't save this village. And it just there was this moment when the nemesis sent wolves into your village, and you have to try and get rid of the wolves quick enough. And I couldn't do it fast enough, and I kept trying again and again and again until
this is the trick way though. wolves are running at you and you can pick them up and put them in your food, like,
yes, or you,
grinder,
or you,
and it kind of grinds them up.
It gives the food to your people, or yeah. or you can send like electricity or something to kill them. But there were too many of them, and it just really annoyed me, because then my little townspeople stopped believing in me as their little god or whatever you want to call it, and it just dispirited me so much, because I wanted so much for the sim not to be horrible, not to be a bitch to me, and it ended up being such a bitch. And it wasn't enjoyable. It was not an enjoyable game. It's a bit of a bitch of a game, basically. And I just spent so many hours playing it, and then at some stage it was just like, actually, no, this is not enjoyable. This is not fun. I hate Peter Molyneux, whatever his name is. That's it. End. Try and make sense of what I just said, but that is the reasons.
I'm trying. It's... from what I remember, and from, like, you know, watching you kind of play it, it seemed like the main thing was it put you under a lot of stress, and it tells you, I mean, because you want to do it all perfectly and all that stuff, but it's like a test.
I just wanted them to be happy.
At a certain point, or several points, it's like a reflex test.
The fact that I didn't realise that you could never make your people happy,
right,
and I kept trying, and it just wouldn't work.
Yeah,
trapped me in this horrible position of trying to make these people happy. And I kept building more and more houses because I kept demanding it. But then there was just, oh, yeah.
Yeah, they have a never-ending supply of problems. And that's one of the things you learn when you look on a walkthrough, and the first thing they tell you is it's not possible.
Don't try and do it.
It's impossible. Yeah.
That's not the point of the game.
And they constantly whinge at you. Whenever you are zoomed in,
you can
near
just hear
them,
more food, more buildings. We need more buildings, or whatever the hell.
Yeah,
and
what
it's
was
like,
the
shut
one?
The
oh,
fuck.
That one. We need offspring.
Yes. Stop asking for offspring. And it was just like these just horny little buggers. They just want you to get them to breed. And the thing is, you're not allowed to let them do that. You have to, like, control their population and stuff like that. And you have to try. And basically, the reason why it's called black and white,
it's a never-ending cycle, isn't it?
Yeah.
If you give them breeders, then they ask,
then
for,
they
houses,
ask for houses,
and they ask for food,
and they ask
and
for
so
food.
On, so on.
And the thing is, it's called black and white because you can choose to be evil. You can choose to just, you know, kill people off if there's too many people, the population has gone out of control. Or you could just not feed them or whatever, and you could sort of make people fear you, and then that, and rule by fear. Or you
because
can,
the kind of currency in the game is belief.
Is belief, yes.
Yeah, so when you, whatever you do, whether it's doing benevolent stuff or doing evil stuff, you're increasing your the belief in you because you're displaying your power. Kind
exactly,
of
exactly. And I understand, basically, I feel like I would make a really terrible ruler because I just care far too much. Like, I cared so much. It makes me scared if I ever have children. I'm just going to be this kind of psychotic mum that just wants everything to be good and perfect in their world and be very controlling because of that. Anyway.
So black and white is a good...
It's a good practice for if you want kids.
Baby sim.
No, but it's just this, all this kind of multitasking and stuff like that. But regardless, I mean, there are some really good aspects to it, but you just have to be a bit kind of cold and precise in a way that I can't really be during gameplay. Yeah.
I have a question for you, actually, about one aspect, which is the story.
Okay.
What you thought about that? It's got quite a serious tone to it, but with some sort of comic relief characters, and I always found it a bit odd.
I suppose I understand what you mean. There's quite a lot of conflict because it kind of tried to have sort of funny, like your conscience, you have like a devil and you have a kind of old man angel. I don't know what the hell he was meant to be, the wise guy. And they told you, you know, if you wanted to be good, you would follow the wise guy. If you wanted to be bad, you follow the devil, who are constantly with you and tell you how to play the game. It is kind of awkward though, because some of the things that the villagers ask you to do are quite serious. But then if you want to be evil, you can be evil and, you know, it's quite dark, I guess. It can be quite dark.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just kind of like the tone of it is, I find, a bit strange and a bit all over the place.
All over the place. I agree with that.
Yeah. But it fits with the gameplay, which also is kind of
all over the place.
But it's very ambitious, and you can see there's a lot of promise.
They had
sure
a lot
they
of ideas. Yeah, they had a lot of ideas. I can see, it would have been a good game, but it's just some very big flaws.
Yeah.
And do you want to talk about your games you play?
Yeah, well, I only have one game really to talk about this week. I'm going to talk about Earthbound on the Super Nintendo. Yeah, I mean, Earthbound is obviously such a famous and kind of... almost legendary game. And I have played it before. I played it years and years ago, but I'd never completed it, and it'd been such a long time. I had played Mother 3, you know, on kind of the fan translation a couple of years ago on an emulator on the PC, and I played that all the way through. Earthbound and Mother 3 are very similar in basically every way. There's hardly any difference. I think I prefer Mother 3 a bit. From what I remember there being more funny dialogue. And I used to go, I remember going around and talking, wanting to talk to all of the NPCs all of the time to pick up all the dialogue. And Earthbound is still amusing, but maybe not quite to the same extent. But, I mean, Earthbound's it's compelling. I don't know, there's something about the style of the game. It grabs you with not very much. Like, I really like, at the start of Earthbound, basically what happens is there's a meteorite hits, and you go out with your best friend to go and investigate what's happened. And when you finally get there, this fly comes out and says, hey, I'm from the future. You know, I had to come back and warn you. There's this evil, like Terminator style, there's this evil guy in the future, and he's taken over the world, and you need to get rid of him now, because now he's only gathering his strength. And he sent people back in time as well. These Terminator, they're literally like, they're called Starmen. They're these silver kind of Terminator-like, you know, like in Terminator 2, the liquid metal guy, kind of like that. You've got to go sort it out now, and you're the only one, you're the chosen one. And all this kind of stuff. And then you carry the fly around with you, and he attacks enemies, and he's really powerful, and it's like, wow, it's really cool. And then you drop your best friend back off at his house, and his parents, who clearly beat the child quite clearly.
What?
Yeah, no, it's like a joke. They just,
yeah, hilarious.
One guy's like a colonel, and it's all a parody of like America, sort of imagination of what America is.
Suburbia.
And the wife also is similarly kind of gung-ho, and she sees the fly and says, oh, what an annoying fly, and then she swats it, yeah. And he's just like, oh, I thought I was so strong. So there's a lot, the humour kind of, you know, kind of goes like that, and the rest of the game is just filled with these little kind of comical interludes as you very, very gradually learn a tiny bit more about the world and the future. And from what I remember about the game, it's only really at the end where you actually kind of get into the kind of backstory about this guy and stuff. But the backstory, I suppose, is really, really background. And
for it's incidental.
For the most part, it's just these little kind of small challenges of there's some girl who's been kidnapped, go save her. You've got to get rid of the punks at the arcade. You've got to pay off this band's debt. Stuff like that. It
basically reminds me a great deal of Pokemon. In that respect.
Yeah, and it looks just so like much it. Like it, yeah. It really kind of straddles the line between being targeted at kids and adults. Well, I mean, I guess a lot of games back then did. But in this one, but the fact that the writing is actually good and the translation is actually good means that it automatically skews older than a lot of RPGs from that time, you know, that would have more kind of explicitly child-oriented stuff. I don't know. I mean, it's really hard to judge with these kind of things, but
are you enjoying it?
Yeah, I am. And I haven't finished it. I've gotten quite a long way in. I'm at Foreside. It's a difficult game. You have to do, I wouldn't say exactly grinding, but the battle system is quite slow. But there's some little wrinkles that help. So if you're really powerful, you defeat enemies automatically. You know, there are no random battles, which again, I suppose, kind of innovative for the time or unusual. So, I mean, I don't really have that much to say about it. I mean, it's quite good, and I'm kind of getting along with it. The best thing about it, and I think it's the only thing that really, really kind of stands out and makes the game memorable, aside from the writing, which is good, is the music. The music is absolutely fantastic. And I love it, and you can really see why the game has lasted. But I mean, in all honesty, I mean, it's a good game, but the music seems to me to be the really standout.
Time transcendent.
Yeah, it's the bit that really sort of lasts. And what's really nice is that the further you go in the game, you're always hearing new themes, and the music actually seems to get better as you carry on, which is nice.
Can I talk about the other game I've been playing?
Please.
So the other game that I've been playing is Harvest Moon Magical Melody, which I basically... Another game to try and fill the Civ gap.
Harvest Moon Majora's Mask.
Well, I think they did. Pretty good.
I mean, I think they did it, didn't
with
they?
Rune Factory. Yeah, I know, but Zelda.
I can see it. It actually makes sense when you think about the 2D, yeah. the 2D Zeldas, and you're cutting bushes down all the time. That's yeah, what Link does best: cut grass,
Epona, and all that.
And, yeah.
That, oh, I'd love that. Imagine if you were the you know the what's the girl's name that owns the farm?
Marin.
Yeah, maybe.
Or Malon.
Yeah, Marin, and her dad, and you can be those, and they could have like a mini spin-off game.
Hey, there you go.
That's okay.
Well, you know, technically, I mean, since you can name all the characters in Harvest Moon, couldn't you give it a Zelda twist?
I can live out my fantasy.
I mean, Magical Melody looks, you know, just talk a bit about the graphics in it, it looks just like Wind Waker.
It does look scary like Wind Waker.
Like cel-shaded, and even the character kind of design, the way they look. Even though your main character looks... I don't want to say what he looks
like. He shat his pants.
He looks so weird.
He looks like a very tubby little toddler that's a bit overgrown.
And he's got this weird fringe. Well, not even fringe, a weird quiff.
I think it's called...
Sticking out of his hair, his cap.
It's called a duck something.
A duck's ass. No, sorry, that's Mark Kermode's hairstyle.
It's called a duck something. Anyway, yeah, I've been really enjoying it. I had to go away, so I have not been playing it for a week. But I'll probably get back to it. And it's a lot like, in many ways, it's a lot like one of the best Harvest Moons, Harvest Moon Back to Nature. And it's a lot like that, but it's sort of got an added twist where you, not only do you have to have a farm and a house, but you have to sort of expand and you can buy new bits of land, and also kind of, you can appropriate public spaces to farm as well, though I haven't got to that stage yet. And you also need to find these little notes, these musical notes, which you can do by things like standing still or using the watering can 30 times, like random stuff like that.
And there's like 100 of
those
notes.
There are 100 to get. And
so some of them are very easy.
So the first couple
are
super easy.
Some of them are very hard. But you have to do them, right? Or a certain
you
number
to
complete the game.
You need to do 30, I think. Or something like that. 50 or something like that. For the goddess to... break out of her stone, like she's been made in stone because she doesn't feel like the town appreciate nature enough or something. I don't know, some bullcrap like that. I don't know. And it's always got some weird kind of ecology thing going on in the kind of environmentalist streak in Harvest Moon. It's just like, anyway, I'm not going to go down my whole farming, modern day farming route. But anyway, my critique of modern day farming.
Which you could via Harvest Moon.
Fertilizer? How dare they? I actually has like lots of new elements like that, and there's also things like you can buy fertilizer and do all kinds of new things, and there's all these new characters.
Oh, can I ask, sorry, what happens, I mean, when the goddess
comes back? I think you do have to complete a year, I think, or like you need to like be married and things like that, but I think that is the main goal of the game, but I don't know, I haven't played that much. I've only played it like a month or two or something.
Okay. And a lot of them will just happen in the course of things. There are others that won't.
There are things that will just take time, like befriending people.
Yeah.
Like you need to befriend all the boys and girls. Yeah, that is one criticism I'm going to make. Because I am actually, it's really enjoyable. It's very addictive, which is good for me. But I am very upset that the European version does not have a girl character.
Oh, let's tell the story. I mean, it's a weird story, right?
It's a very odd story.
I mean, you're playing the Wii version, right? Because there was a GameCube version which lets you play as a girl, but the GameCube version never came out in Europe for some odd reason. And the Wii version, however, came out in all territories, but for some reason they removed the girl from it.
I don't know
And as far as I know, there are no other differences.
I have a feeling it's just because they want boys. But it's weird because Harvest Moon is a girls' game. That's kind of what it's known for. Although I know loads of guys must love it. But I mean, that it's kind of known as one of those games that kind of is a bit unisex. I should put it nicely and say that. But and I think that's a shame because I would love to like marry one of the hot guys instead of pretending to fancy the hot girls.
Do you think that it was because... you know, there is a guy a guy you can marry.
Your rival, Jamie.
Your rival, yeah, who you can marry.
Mm-hmm.
And you can marry him, stroke her, whether you are play as a boy or a girl. Boy. Yeah. Whereas the others are very clearly, these are the boys and these are the girls.
Performing their gender correctly.
Yeah, yeah.
Conforming to their gender.
But this one is like a kind of androgynous.
Androgynous.
Is it fat? Is it? Do you know? Is it a boy or a girl?
It's the thing is, he's very fat, so you can't tell. They were really right. Aussie, very chubby, quite a unisex face.
Yeah.
Yeah, and also Jamie could be a girl's or a boy's name.
Yeah, 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 exactly.
I don't really care, to be honest. I don't care.
But I know it's such an odd kind of thing, but do you think that's why?
I'm going to blame America. That's really the only thing I could... Because do you think...
No, but it came out in America. The GameCube one came out in America.
Did it? It was just Europe.
Just Europe, yeah.
Then it doesn't even make sense.
No, it doesn't make sense.
To blame America.
No.
Okay, I have no idea what the reason is. I mean... It doesn't make any sense. I don't know. We should send an angry email.
I don't know. I mean, Europe's missed Harvest Moon games in the past. It's had a spotty record.
To have something removed from a version just doesn't really make sense.
No, I think the boy-girl thing is just not there in the Wii version in general. So I don't know. I still don't think it makes sense, really. But given that the Wii is more powerful than the GameCube, we had to take it out. But, you know... It's all speculation, really. Yeah. I don't think anyone's really talked about it publicly.
But kind of on a bright note, it is good. I mean, there are some... I still think that Back to Nature is better. I enjoyed it more because in some ways, Magical Melody overcomplicates certain things, but it's a hell of a lot better than A Wonderful Life. Oh my God, Wonderful Life sucks so much.
did we talk about A Wonderful Life
before? I did a couple of weeks ago,
yeah.
and I realise what it is. It's because it's boring. It's a very boring game. And you noticed by watching me several times, you got quite into watching, didn't you? Because
Magical Melody, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Because
yeah.
you were yeah. like, oh, it's actually got pace. There's some urgency here.
It's more like a... Yeah, there's more of a... I know it sounds really dumb, but it's more of a game than I'd realised. And there's more kind of...
It was just more interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it kind of gives you that... It's that got that feedback loop.
Yeah.
Of like positivity, collecting more stuff in quite an addictive way. And that doesn't just involve the repetitive side of like watering your crops and feeding your cows and all that stuff, which I found it seems very dull to me, but the fact that you have all this kind of these quest like aspects of you've got to participate in these festivals, you've got to
fall in love with someone relatively quickly.
Yeah, you've got to make other people like you, and it's got these and collect these notes, and you can mine and things like that. You know, there's more. I mean, it's still quite grindy, but
I'm glad you're seeing the light.
It's one of these things. It's grindy, but there's a lot of activities for you to grind in. It sounds weird, but yeah, it varies it up enough.
It makes me want to buy Ruin Factory. I'm definitely gonna. Like, look into getting a Ruin Factory pretty soon.
But just by comparison, that one, Back to Nature... No, sorry.
Wonderful Life.
A Wonderful Life, that's on PS2. I mean, aside from that aspect of me just not being able to see that, that same kind of, like, goal-oriented kind of thing, there was also, I mean, just the way A Wonderful Life looks. I mean, it looks awful, horrible to look at.
Yeah.
And it is so slow... The way that your character moves incredibly slowly, the frame rate is awful, the camera, it just looks so low budget and so awful.
A lot of people will say it's one of the best, but it's not. It's quite a divisive,
which is
weird. How can a Harvest Moon game be divisive?
Man, like, Harvest Moon fans are, you know...
Are they diehard?
Yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah, but...
You have to be diehard. Are you putting in, you know, 40 hours or whatever into...
No, but it's but I know, but even that is kind of ironic because it's just such a, you know, it looks on the surface to be a farming game. You know, you just, as you say, oh, you just got to water your crops, do you, and feed the cow. Is that what you got to do? But it's just, it isn't like that. It kind of gets into my head in that kind of, yeah, you're right, the collecting and grinding side of it. But then with Wonderful Life, they seem to have removed that aspect of it, which seems to be a complete conflict. Why conflict of interest? Why would you do that? Remove what makes Harvest Moon from Harvest Moon and just go, oh, it's just a pretty farming game. Let's just make things super easy for you and just, you know, give you these, like, give you a cow from the start, give you all your buildings from the start. Just irritates me thinking about it. Finny.
Yeah. That's going to wrap up the show. Just the one segment this week. next time. I don't say next week. I apologise because it's been a long
gap.
It's been a long gap. But next time, I hope we'll get back and to kind of a more normal
structure.
Routine. We'll have just a few games, and we'll have normal kind of community segment with the with the usual.
Yeah, because otherwise it's just too much of us chat.
Yeah, it's nice to get some other voices in it and talk about more general stuff. But you know what? We wanted to keep it short, so
farewell.
Goodbye. Bye. We'll see you on episode 7. And then we can just talk about LKS.
LKS makes it sound like Al Qaeda. LKS, the new ISIS.
LKS, the new threat.
With that cute little king!